Oh.
All right, welcome to episode 8 of the First Hour Podcast. I'm Paul Eastwood, your host, and with me is Greg Noe, founder of firsthour.net. Greg?
Hey, Paul. How's it going?
Pretty good, Greg. What have you been playing lately?
A lot of Dragon Quest IX, a lot of Xbox 360 games. Yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, I hit it on the Dragon Quest IX. Basically, after last episode, you and Mike pretty much convinced me to get the game. And I haven't regretted it one bit. I got it, I guess, Tuesday night, and I've played about 15 hours since then now, which for me is really, really hardcore. Don't ask where those hours came from.
I hadn't played the game in like a week and a half, and then we started talking about it. I'm like, I want to play this again. And then like another couple days went by, and I'm finally back into it now. Yeah. And still, it's a lot of fun. I've barely done anything story-wise. I've just been leveling up different jobs and grinding.
Yeah, this is the first game I've played since I was a kid that I've enjoyed grinding. And I guess as a kid, just because I was playing a video game, it's fun. But since then, I've just grinding has been really annoying as I've gotten older and had less time to devote to games. But I don't know, grinding is just, it's just fun in this game.
It's rewarding to level up.
Yeah. And it's not even like the battle system is so, like, exciting or anything that you just want to fight. It's you know, pretty traditional. Choose your attacks from a menu and watch them play out. But it's just, the battles they're quick, and the way they've balanced the leveling seems to be really perfect.
Yeah. I think the battles are even better now that I like letting the AI do stuff, like you mentioned.
That's one of the things I like.
Controlled everyone, and now you can kind of let them do their own thing, and they're pretty smart, so.
Yeah, but the normal battles are fine. I was kind of thinking that that's probably how all RPGs would have been, but they didn't have the technology back then, you know, in the NES and Super NES days to do it. Given the way that the battle systems worked, they probably would have done that sooner if they had had the technology for it. But,
yeah.
I don't know. It just seems to be the kind of epitome of an RPG battle system of, like, choosing your... Because even if you let the AI do it for you, you can still, at any turn, you can take back command of it if you want them to do something specific. So it's not like you lose that. It's just, you don't have to do it. You don't have to input their command every time, so.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, the first JRPG that kind of took control away from you. And, I mean, a couple are coming to mind, but I'm not really sure what would have been the first. So.
Well, I mean, I know some, like the Tales series, you had, they did, but it was a real-time battle system. Like, on the old ones, it was like a side-scrolling beat-em-up almost, the battle system was. But, so you controlled one character, and then the AI controlled the others, or the CPU, as they used to call it, controlled the others.
Yeah. There were some Tales games on the Super Nintendo, right?
Yeah, Tales of Phantasia was on the Super NES, and I think there was some others in Japan as well.
I know, like, Star Ocean 1.
Yeah.
On the Super Nintendo, and that was similar to Star Ocean 2, so... And you could only control your main character pretty much. I think you could switch between, but otherwise the AI would take over, so...
Okay. Yeah, so I guess they were trying that out back then.
Yeah, other than Dragon Quest, I was trying to finish up a bunch of Xbox 360 games, and I collected all the stars in Super Mario Galaxy 2.
Woohoo!
So, I've been pretty busy gaming-wise lately. I guess I've been trying to focus on finishing stuff.
Yeah, that's something I got into for a little while, and then, I don't know, sometimes it's just not worth it to play a whole game if you have other stuff to move on to. Like, I don't know, I have a bunch of old GameCube games that I've not finished, and a few games on the PlayStation 2 as well. Oh, I need to send this back to you, by the way.
Yeah, that's okay.
So anyway, but
I guess I like writing reviews about games.
Yeah.
Just playing. I don't really like to write reviews until I actually finish the game. So
that makes sense. But I've started. Besides Dragon Quest IX, I also played a little bit of StarCraft II.
Okay.
The trial. It's like a you can get like a 14-day trial. It lets you play the full game for 14 days or 7 hours, whichever comes first. So I played for like 2.5 hours or something, and it's really fun. Like, I was surprised. I'm not a huge fan of RTS, and I had played the StarCraft multiplayer beta, and it was okay. Like, it was fun enough, but nothing I would want to buy. But the single player campaign is really interesting. Like, the single player campaign is basically a tutorial for the multiplayer. So like, it teaches you how to like control your units and then build order and stuff like that. But they disguise it really, really well, like a lot better than I thought they would. And so they go through the missions, and it's like secretly they're teaching you how to do this, but they've set that up in a compelling mission. And I'm ruining it for everybody now by saying this, because most people probably won't even realize that's what's going on. So people will go back and be like, I can't believe I just played that many hours of a tutorial for the multiplayer game. But,
it's like Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah, kind of.
No multiplayer in that.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that was like a tutorial all for the just one segment at the end. but it was a very fun tutorial.
You say so?
Yeah, it was. In fact, by the part I left off on was the part where you get to the end that you were being tutored for, so it had got boring by that time. Anyway, so StarCraft, I don't know, it looks really good, and it plays really well, or good, whatever, and I don't know, I'm not gonna, like I said, this is the trial, I'm not gonna pay $60 for it to upgrade, but I don't know, if it cost less, I probably would. Maybe.
Yeah, I'd probably pay 40.
But. Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. It will probably be
a lot.
It'll probably be years before it's down to $40, but the way StarCraft works.
Probably.
Maybe if I just leave this install on my hard drive, and then when my son is old enough to play it, it'll be down to $40 and he can learn it and then go online and play against Koreans. Is that a.
He's like, what? He's like, what, 4 years old?
He's three and a half, yeah.
He's old enough to play.
Almost.
Can learn some micro and.
Yes. Uber micro. Oh, man. And then also, some of those that I was talking about, those games, those older games that I had. Like, I have a bunch of games on the GameCube that I've never actually even played. Like, that I've never even put in my system. And so, finally, I was just like, you know what, I need to just at least, like, play these to see what they are, if they're any good. And, so I went through a bunch, like, Blood Rain. No. it wasn't worth it, believe me. What's it? Tomb Raider Legend, which wanted to be... It's really funny. It wanted to be Uncharted so badly. But of course Uncharted hadn't come out yet, so it didn't know that, but I was just, like, after having played Uncharted 2, and then going back to this, I was like, wow, what this could have been, but wasn't. So I stopped playing after, like, 45 minutes, I think. I came to a kind of an obtuse puzzle, and I was just like, whatever, it's not worth it.
45 minutes, so you didn't even make an hour, huh?
No. And then Gun, which I actually played for a few hours, which was was basically wanted to be Red Dead Redemption. It's very, like, from what I've heard about, I haven't played Red Dead, but from what I've heard about it, it's very similar, but Gun is very, like, it's not fleshed out. Like, you're in a town and there's people, but it doesn't feel like you're actually in a town. Like, the people are only there to tempt you to kill them. Like, they don't actually do anything. They just, like, wander around, and you don't ever get the feeling that you're, like, in a real place. Riding the horse around is fun, but I don't know. I mean, it was fun for a few hours, but that's about it, so.
I'm hoping I can get my hands on Red Dead Redemption this weekend. You were mentioning how you were catching up on some GameCube games, and I was catching up on Xbox 360 games. The first hour received a Split Second a couple months ago, and we've been passing it around, and it finally got to me. And I played the first hour of it the other day, and I loved it. Played another hour right away.
Okay, that's a racing game, right? Which one is it? what's the hook or whatever, the gimmick?
The catch is that you can, like, trigger explosions and stuff around the track.
Okay.
So
it's like, that's the one that's like a Michael Bay movie about cars racing that you play?
Yes. Okay. There's, like, airplanes that land on the track in front of you, and you have to, like, dodge them and stuff. And okay.
I always got that confused with Blur.
Yeah, I don't know what Blur's thing is.
Blur, it's like you're racing real cars, but you get like Mario Kart style power-ups.
Yeah, this is not like that. This is like a combination of Burnout and Stuntman.
Okay.
And like some kind of a explosion game. Last quarter, I don't know.
Okay.
So basically, like you build up like this not a boost meter, but like it's called like the power play meter or something like that.
Okay.
And like if you have like a power play available, like an icon will appear in front of a racer in front of you, and then you like hit the A button, and if you timed it right, like an explosion will occur, and some like bus will like flip over, and you hope it lands on them. So.
Okay. So how much? Really. How much control do you have over that, though? It sounds like it's kind of out of your control.
Well, okay, the trick is that you need to be familiar with the level and have, like, the timing for the stuff down. So, like, the icon will appear for maybe 5 seconds, and if you trigger it too early, then they can dodge it. If you trigger it too late, then you might run into it.
Okay.
So
you kind of have to know the level ahead of time.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's still fun that I really enjoyed it, so I'm gonna keep playing.
Cool. Any other games you?
Yeah, I first hour to Halo ODST the other night too, like right after, and I don't know, I'm not really sure what I think of that game right now. Just like I was trying to figure out like what I was playing. I mean, I wasn't really sure like the. They're, like, trying to tell, like, a narrative. They're trying to tell, like, a real story. But, I mean, this is, like, Bungie. These are the Halo developers. I mean, I don't know. I'm not really sure what they're going for. Okay, so one of my major beefs is that Nathan Fillion voice.
Yeah. Well,
and it's so distracting.
Okay, so actually, one of the big deals about that was that Nathan Fillion did one of the voices, and Alan Tudyk did one of the voices, and the other guy, basically the three guys from Firefly, did the voices of the main characters.
Adam Baldwin?
Yeah, Adam Baldwin. So it was...
Who was Tudyk? Is that Wash?
Yeah, that's Wash. So it was those three guys did the voices of the three main characters on the show. Now, the other two voices aren't as well-known, I guess, as Nathan Fillion's, but... And not only that, but the characters were very close to their characters from Firefly.
Okay.
And, like, their personalities or whatever. And I've heard that even the Adam Baldwin's character quotes a line from Firefly on the game, which seems a little bit, I don't know.
I believe it. This is the same thing that happened with Call of Duty World at War for me. Kiefer Sutherland does one of the main voices.
Yeah.
So they're like, Jack Bauer, you know, right. Jack Bauer's in front of me. And now it's like Captain Mal. I don't know. This is, I'm distracted by celebrity voice actors, I guess. And I was on a Mafia 2 conference call today with the like the main like the project lead. And someone asked him, you know, what do you guys have any major voice actors for your Mafia game? Do you have like Robert De Niro? He's like, no. His major complaint was that it's very distracting. Like the moment you hear someone you recognize, you get brought out of the game, and then he went on to say, like, I was actually kind of impressed by his description of how they record the voices.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually bring like everyone in the studio that's going to be in a scene together at the same time.
Yeah,
and they actually, you know, talk back and forth instead of one person just recording their lines.
Yeah. Actually,
I know a lot of games do that, like Mass Effect and everything, so...
Wait, a lot of games do what? Record them separately?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, most games record them separately. I was really surprised. I knew that some games did, and that... I knew that whenever they localized the game, a Japanese game, that's how they did it, but... one of the big deals, supposedly, about Uncharted 2, like, they... they brought everybody in and they let them like work off each other and ad lib and stuff like that. So when I heard that, I was like, wait, that's not how they record game narrative. No wonder it sounds so bad. They're just getting each individual character in there separately. So yeah, that it helps a lot. Cause Uncharted 2, I mean, the acting in there was, And I mean, this is part of the problem. Like, you could tell that they were actually talking to each other rather than just reading lines.
I'm looking forward to listening to Mafia 2 now. I mean,
yeah.
I guess I really enjoy good voice acting when I hear it, like the Mass Effect series and things like that. So I'm interested to see how, if it sounds any different. Now that I know this, maybe it's going to be annoying for me to like try to pick it out. But
see, that's what happened with Uncharted 2. Like, when I was playing, I would be listening to see if it sounded like they were actually talking to each other or working off each other. And it did, but that was still kind of distracting.
Yep. So,
I don't know.
The perils of getting free review copies.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's... I guess I never really thought about that with celebrity voice actors. But
yeah,
I
also mentioned... He mentioned, like, if they got Robert De Niro to do a voice,
yeah,
they wouldn't bring him in until the game was finished. Because they couldn't, you know, they don't want to bring him in, you know, change a scene and then bring him in again.
Because
it's just going to give me millions of dollars, you know, for this one guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, that makes sense. So.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. So if they really want to get good at, like, a good acting setup, they kind of have to just go with the low budget voice actors that they can afford to keep in there.
He actually talked a lot about voice acting because, I mean, with Mafia 2, everyone needed to have, like, an authentic Brooklyn,
right,
you know, new Italian accent.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, he said they got, like, maybe over 1,000 auditions.
Wow.
That were sent in. And, you know, first he had to basically narrow it down from, like, who was good and who could do the accent and then, you know, who fit the roles and everything. So, I don't know, I thought that was a really interesting part of the discussion we had.
So, they don't have any celebrity voice actors. Do they have any voice actor celebrities? Like, big name voice actors?
I think Nathan Drake from Uncharted is a voice actor.
Well, he doesn't count because he's on every game. So,
but doesn't that make him a voice actor celebrity?
Yeah, it does.
Isn't he like the male version of Jennifer Hale?
Yeah, right now he is the male version of Jennifer. Okay, that's one of the funny things. That game Gun, he plays like a really, really bit part on there. It's back before he was like that was back when he was just picking up small roles here and there on games, and now he's like, you know, Nathan Drake. So. That was kind of funny.
He's the David Hayter of non-Metal Gear Solid games.
I was going to say, David Hayter doesn't really do that much voice acting. He's pretty much only Solid Snake. He's a Hollywood...
I don't know if I've ever heard of him in anything else.
I don't think he has done anything else. He's a Hollywood screenwriter. Is his day job. I don't know why... or how he did Solid Snake's voice.
Yeah, that's I'm curious about that story too. So.
Yeah, but it's actually really funny to see interviews with him because he doesn't talk like Solid Snake does, but every now and then you can see how that voice comes from him. Like, it's like he'll say something with a different kind of emotion or something. It's like when he's laughing or something like that, you can hear kind of that growl come out a little bit. Like, normally his voice is growly like Solid Snake's, but, and if you were to just hear him talk, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's totally Solid Snake. But then if you know it's him and you're listening for it, every now and then you're like, wait, that could have been Solid Snake right there. And it's funny.
Yeah.
But he's a really funny guy. Like, he's kind of goofy. I guess to be a voice actor, you kind of have to be goofy, because...
So the first voice actor I ever noticed was this guy. I think he did the anime Outlaw Star.
Mm-hmm.
And he played, like, Jim, who was, like, this, older guy, but he looked like a child.
Okay.
And then the same voice actor played someone on Xenosaga, Episode 1,
uh-huh.
who was, like, an old... ancient person, but they look like a child.
That's
the same type cat as the old dude who looks like a kid.
That's just wrong.
I have no idea who he is, but
it's funny.
I always thought that was funny.
The first voice actor I ever noticed was, I'm pretty sure, now I used to notice names, but as far as like hearing a voice and being like, oh, that's the same voice as such and such, I can't remember his name now, but he did the voice of Robin on Teen Titans, and then he also did the voice of Lloyd in Tales of Symphonia. And so that was the first time that I was distracted by a voice. I got Tales of Symphonia, started playing, and I'm like, it's Robin. And, like, he wasn't doing a different voice or anything. It was just, he was just straight up talking. And it was like, wow, this is Robin. And after a while, I got used to it, you know, it didn't bother me as much, but yeah, it was pretty funny.
Like, the guy I hear everywhere now is Keith David.
Who's that?
Who, he's like this totally veteran actor. He was like the main Captain Anderson in Mass Effect. He was the Arbiter in Halo. You would recognize him. He's got this super deep voice. He's like the modern day James Earl Jones. Not that James Earl Jones is dead or anything, but...
The modern-day James Earl Jones, bless his soul.
Oh, and he was in Modern Warfare 2. He's also in Final Fantasy Dissidia. This is weird. I didn't play that, but...
So anyway, you were talking about Mafia 2.
Yeah, so we're getting a review copy of that game after it releases at the end of this month.
Nice.
And what... It seems like it's a Grand Theft Auto clone, but they're like approaching the genre totally differently. Like it's not supposed to be a sandbox game, even though it's like a open world city.
Okay.
So I was trying to figure out where they're coming from. So they're like bragging how it's a 10 square mile city and all that, and like, oh, I mean, that seems big, but I don't know if it is. And then they're like, but we focused on a linear story, and he was like unabashedly, saying that this is a linear game. And I was like, so you spent all this time building up this city and you don't really want people to explore it. And I don't know. So I'm really curious about how this game plays.
Yeah.
Like if they're still going to encourage you to kind of venture out a bit, or if, they just want you to go from mission to mission. So
maybe that's going to be like end game stuff where you can explore the whole city or something.
You can't.
Oh,
someone asked that question.
Okay.
When the game's over, the game's over.
Weird.
So, yeah.
I mean, it sounds a little bit, I mean, in a way, almost like, I mean, on a larger scale, but like kind of the way Dragon Quest IX is set up, it's like, it has a linear story. You can just wander around if you want, but and sometimes you do, but then you go back to the story. But that's set up so that in the end game, after you beat it, you can go around and do quests and level up and stuff. So if they're just, if the game just ends when you beat the story, that's kind of a weird seems like a waste of resources to make. I mean, I guess we'll have to see how it actually plays, you know, and how.
I don't know. I don't know. It's going to have to be a really strong narrative. I mean, chances are I'd focus more on the real missions anyway. Yeah. That's just kind of my thing. I don't branch out a lot. So, I don't know. I'm really curious. I'm pretty excited about this game. I don't really know anything about it, you know, beyond what I heard in the call today. So,
well, it's probably for the best. I mean, maybe not the best, but it's a good idea, because I know back when what was the Grand Theft Auto game? Grand Theft Auto 3 was the one that was the first open world 3D Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Yep. So those sandbox games became really popular. People trying to emulate the success of Grand Theft Auto, and they started finding out that, like, if you just throw a person in a game and don't really give them much guidance, then they don't really play it. Like, they'll play around with it for a little bit, and then that'll be it, because there's nothing leading them through it. And so I think that that's some kind of balance of that, like having the open world yet not making it a sandbox game is probably a good balance, but I don't know, it sounds like they're taking it a little too, like, not letting you explore it after you finish the game seems like a mistake.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that. But one of their things they talked about was how let me catch my train of thought. Okay. So, I mean, they didn't really talk about if there are a lot of, like, side missions.
Okay.
But someone asked, like, you know, can you, you know, what kind of, I mean, are you actively restricting the player from not, you know, doing, you know, just wandering around and doing stuff? And they're like, no. I mean, you can do it most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you can go fight cops, and, you know, if you kill a cop, then everyone in the city will, all the cops will be going after you because you're a cop killer. And it seems like it's really hardcore. Like, the guy's like, oh, you can do this, but you will die.
Huh.
Like, I'm not really sure. I don't know. I assume they know what they're doing. But at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, people want to be able to, you know, do whatever they want sometimes.
Yeah.
And flat out saying, like, if you break this rule in the game, you will be punished. So, I don't know.
You didn't play Mafia, the first Mafia, did you?
No.
Because, I mean, you say you assume they know what they're doing, but, I mean, do they? I don't know. Maybe they don't know what they're doing.
Well, that's a good point. I think Mafia was a huge hit on the PC.
Yeah.
But it was 8 years ago. And one of my questions to them was, I mean, you released Mafia 8 years ago, it was a big success, but what are you doing now?
Right.
You know, to, you know, attract new customers. I mean, this is a series that people have forgotten. If you hadn't called it Mafia 2, I mean, you could have called it Mafia 1, and most people would probably have been like, okay,
yeah,
there's a new game called Mafia.
Yep. So, I would have. I didn't know about Mafia. The only reason I knew there was a Mafia was because this is called Mafia 2. And I was like, I assume that means there was a Mafia at some point. But somebody should make a game and just new IP and call it something 2. Because since sequels do better, people will be like, hey, the first one must have been popular if they made a second one. And it's actually the first one.
Well, I hate to bring up Star Ocean again, but that happened. I mean, that happens in the U.S. a lot. Star Ocean, the second story.
Yeah, that's true. In that.
It was released in the U.S. So.
That's true. Dragon Quest IX. Well, I guess IX wasn't the first one, but anyway, Final Fantasy.
Maybe you only knew it as Dragon Warrior, and then all of a sudden you're like, Dragon Quest. Yeah. I don't know. That seems kind of dumb.
Yeah, I don't know.
So speaking of open world games, I guess I just beat The Saboteur.
Oh yeah.
About a week and a half ago or so. And I guess that was pretty good timing to beat that game or to play that game because, you know, that was a historical, it was set in Paris during World War II. Mafia is set in, I guess, a combination of New York and San Francisco in the, I think, late 50s, early 60s. Yeah. Unless I'm just confusing that with Mad Men. Maybe it's early 50s.
It's late 40s, early 50s, I think.
Yeah, that probably makes more sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, post-war, yeah, that's what it is. So, I don't know, I'm interested to see how they, you know, what they kind of do. I guess, you know, they focused on guns and vehicles in this conversation, and music. They talk about music a ton, but
okay.
The guns are all, you know, World War II-esque, you know, style guns, and the cars are obviously all from that era.
Yeah.
And that immediately worried me, because one of the things that turned me off from Grand Theft Auto 4 is that the driving was, like, super realistic. And I'm like, well, are they going to make super realistic, crappy
cars that don't handle?
Yeah, but they actually said they're going to have, like, an arcade setting and, a simulation setting.
Okay.
So I'm very happy for that. Hopefully arcade means, like, Grand Theft Auto 3, and simulation means I'll never have to play it.
Seems like one or the other would break the game. It doesn't seem like you could have a game and have both styles of driving in it and have it work both ways.
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good point. We'll see. I'll try them both out.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll hate the simulation,
right.
But in the setting.
Man, I hate driving simulation.
Yeah.
I'll drive a real car if I want to drive a real car. It's more exciting than driving a car in a video game.
And they also talked about, this guy talked about music a ton. They have like 120 licensed tracks from like the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s. And the guy said, this guy seems like he was like the ultimate overlord of this game.
Okay.
He basically picked everything, it seems like.
Wow.
So he said he put like thousands of songs on his iPod and just listened to them for 2 years. And at the end of 2 years, whatever songs he wasn't sick of, he added to the game.
Wow. That's funny. Somebody should make a game set in the late 1800s, and then they could get period music, and they wouldn't have to license it.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Thinking about, like, comic opera music and stuff that was popular back then. Anyway.
So, yeah, Mafia 2, will be writing about that at the end of the month.
Cool.
Saboteur, I wrote about. I also just beat Gears of War 2. That full review will be coming out by the time you hear this podcast. So, I've been pretty busy with gaming, I guess, lately.
Yeah. I have too, but it's all just been in Dragon Quest IX.
That's okay. That's a fun game.
It is.
BioShock Infinite looks incredible. I didn't think I'd ever be blown away by a trailer ever again, but this one did it.
Really? I was...
Did you see the trailer?
Yeah, like...
But you never played the original, so it's not like you can... I don't know. I'm imagining BioShock 1 in
that setting.
Yes, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I got... Yeah, that's true. That's true, I could see that, but... I mean, it was cool and I liked the setting, but I guess that must be what it is, because a lot of people were raving about it online, and when I watched it, I was just like, yeah, I mean, it's nice, I guess. But yeah, I guess because I haven't played BioShock, that's the difference.
You should play it.
I know. There's a lot of games I should play.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this game, but knowing that it's not coming out until 2012,
that
is very sad.
That actually, that's what encouraged me the most about it, because they're obviously taking a lot of time on it. I mean, they've already, what, BioShock came out in 2007 or 8? 7?
BioShock 1 came out in 2007, and this is their next game, 5 years
later. Right, exactly. So they're obviously putting in a ton of time on it.
Yeah.
Which is good. It took them apparently 3 years to come up with this concept and trailer. Whatever else they were doing. And, but I mean, I do really like the kind of diesel punk setting that both the original Bioshock and this one had, of just like alternate history.
I'm a little, I don't know if I'm concerned or what, but there's no like Big Daddy equivalent, it seems like.
There, what about that hand that grabbed the woman and stuff?
Well, I think the woman is like she's the new gimmick.
Yeah, she's your partner, like co-op partner, but she's AI controlled. But it sounded like they were setting up like bigger, like set piece battles with her. Like before, you could use your powers or whatever, and they were cool and all. But with her, it's like she's gonna set it up to where if you use your powers in certain places, it's something really epic happens, like split second. Okay. That from what I was reading, I think Kotaku had a write up about it. So it was like in one place. He had like a lightning power or something, and in one place she made like this storm, and the storm was like chasing people away. Like she made like this big storm cloud, and people started like running. And you could just kind of leave it at that, but he like used the lightning power on the storm cloud, and it made like this huge lightning storm that killed everybody. And that was like an optional thing to do, that it was kind of context sensitive, but it's not like a quick time event. It's like something you actually had to do. So I mean, that sounded pretty cool, like a nifty little thing. If they make her smart enough to where she's not, you know, getting in your way like most AI companions do in action.
Right.
But they kept saying, that was like the first thing the developer said about her, is like, she's not dumb, she doesn't get in your way, she's not a liability. No. And it's like, why? I mean, they have to say that because it's always like that, but it almost seems like they're telling themselves that, you know? Episode of the First Hour Podcast. You can email questions, comments, corrections, or whatever to podcast@firsthour.net. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or via RSS at firsthour.net. I'm Paul Eastwood, and on behalf of Greg Nug, we're out. Probably won't put this part in the podcast because he's like the only person that actually listens to the podcast.
I have some friends that do it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many?
One.
Okay, at least one.
Alright, we should move on to a different topic.
A different topic than voice. We've only been talking about voice actors for about 8 minutes.
Well, I've ran out of knowledge.
Oh, okay. I have more, but it's not interesting, so we can stop.